The Internal Revenue Service is facing another big budget cut if the total the House of Representatives approved for the IRS turns out to be the total the agency gets. The House votes for a bill to bring the IRS's 2015 spending limit to below sequestration levels, and that is a cut of more than $300 million. Jessica Clement is legislative director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. She is looking at how the IRS's potential 2015 budget would affect its employees and how it might impact the way Congress appropriates to other federal agencies. Jess, this we obviously know what's going on politically with the Internal Revenue Service, and we know the issues that members of the House have with the agency from a political perspective. But have we thought about how that has the potential to impact other agencies, not just this year, but moving forward if somebody decides they don't like the way somebody's conducting their business when they happen to be of the other party?
Well, Francis, I think you hit the nail on the head. The message Congress is sending to the IRS, and certainly other federal agencies should be taking note, is that if we don't like what you're doing, we're just going to cut your funding. We're not going to try and get to the bottom of what happened. We're going to ignore reports that put, you know, very clearly what the issue was front and center. We're just going to cut your funding to send you a message.
I thought that some of the conversation at the hearings that the Commissioner Koskinen's been at the last couple of days was interesting, because some of the conversation did actually revolve around, did you have the resources to be able to do this? How much of the issues that you're up against stem from the fact that your budget's gone down consistently the last several years and that you haven't been able to do the things that you've been able to do? And I've been struck, too, by how proactive he's been compared to the leaders of other agencies at saying, I mean, ever since he took the job, the very first day he took the job, part of the reason the agency is struggling is because we haven't gotten the funding that we need for our employees to be able to do the jobs that they're supposed to do.
And how many times have we heard that over the years from all federal agencies, not just the IRS? You look at how much the IRS has changed in recent years. They have Affordable Care Act guidelines they need to follow. And then following the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, they have to decide the status, the tax-exempt status of all these agents, of all these organizations and super PACs and everyone else trying to get their, broadcast their views on the airwaves these days. And yet, since the Citizens United Supreme Court decision came down, that division, the tax-exempt division of the IRS, has had its budget cut 96%, the very division that is supposed to be determining whether or not these organizations should be given tax-exempt status.
Well, and you asked me about how much have we heard that from agencies, and I think you intended it as a rhetorical question, but I'll turn it back to you, Jess. And that is, my sense is we don't hear that very much from agencies who come out and say, as Koskinen did, if you cut our budgets, here's the consequence of that. Here is what the people in your state or district will experience as a result of this. And that, it to me, is an invitation to look at the budget line by line and say, oh, can only answer 60-some percent of the inquiries that you get on your phone lines. Why is that? And that invites a conversation, it seems to me, about where the money's going line by line in the agency. I'm surprised we don't hear it more often than we do.
You know what, Frances? You're right. I think you hear it from groups like NARF, and you hear it from the management organizations, and you certainly hear it from the unions. You know, I certainly think Colleen Kelly did an excellent job on your show explaining this problem. But you're right. You don't hear it from the agencies. You hear it from groups like ours. And, you know, with certain members of Congress, you go up there talking about funding, they're just going to say, well, you're just protecting the employees you represent. You know, you're not... this isn't serious when it comes to agency funding. So, you know, it's a really tough road for employees and agencies alike.
Well, those two statements that you just made, they're not necessarily linked together. I mean, yes, you're representing the people that you're there to represent, Jess, and I understand that. That doesn't necessarily mean that by the very nature of the fact that you're representing them, that you're wrong.
Exactly. Do you think you could tell more people that?
Well, okay. I guess, well, that's kind of the point of having you on the show.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's certainly not your listeners. It would definitely be, you know, members of Congress who like to legislate based on headlines these days, not necessarily on issues.
Another issue that you are working on is six-day delivery at the Postal Service, Jess, and the president of NARF is writing a letter to Congress asking them to stick with the six-day delivery. What went wrong with the suggestion that package delivery continues on the sixth day on Saturdays rather than full-blown delivery the way that it is now?
Well, right now, an appropriations bill, which is always in the financial services and general government appropriations bill, which ultimately makes it into an omnibus or a CR because we don't pass individual appropriations bills these days, then language mandating, since 1983, mandating six-day delivery. For the first time since 1983, the base financial services and general government appropriations bill does not include that language. And is absent of that language, the Postal Service could choose to go to five-day delivery without congressional action. They could unilaterally make that decision. We expect an amendment to be offered in committee tomorrow to restore that language. Not sure at this point in time whether or not that's going to pass. NARF as an organization supports six-day delivery. I mean, the Postal Service is now delivering packages on Sunday. Why would you take away a day of mail delivery? That seems to me to be a little counterproductive.
And I would go along with that right off the top of my head if it wasn't for the fact that the part that the letter says talks about competitive advantage, mm-hmm. and the package delivery competitive advantage for Saturday is fantastic. But somebody else isn't going to be able to deliver my letter on Saturday. So if I don't get it on Saturday and I get it on Monday, that strikes me as not as much of a competitive advantage if the Postal Service loses that, I guess.
Who's to say that FedEx or UPS wouldn't then say, I'll turn around and deliver your letter on Saturday now that the Postal Service won't?
Well, but right now they won't even deliver packages on Saturday unless I pay them a big premium. So it strikes me that the barrier to entry there is high enough that maybe the Postal Service might not lose that competitive advantage.
You're playing devil's advocate. I understand. I think the bottom line is that the American people, for the most part, want six-day delivery. I mean, it's not just packages. You know, you look at companies like Netflix, whose business model up until recently was based on that delivery. And what if people can't get their DVDs on Saturday anymore? My People magazine consistently came on Fridays, sometimes on Saturdays. Do I have to wait until Monday to get my People magazine? That's not what I'm paying for. The Postal Service has a competitive advantage. To take that away does not solve the financial problems that the Postal Service is currently experiencing, which is based on one issue and one issue only, and that is the unprecedented pre-funding requirement of its retiree health care.